We would like to send out a special thanks to HelloFresh.com for supporting The Trail Went Cold. And we would like to thank you, the listeners, by giving you the chance to receive $30 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code COLD30. That's COLD30. Enjoy the show. May 9th, 1994. Pine Bluff, Arkansas. 18-year-old Clashindra Hall phones her mother from her workplace to say she will be working late and might be calling again once her shift ends. Clashindra never phones back and does not return home. Clashindra's boss, Dr. Larry Amos, claims that someone else picked her up that night, but troubling holes open up in his story and he displays some suspicious behavior. However, no hard evidence is ever found to incriminate Amos, and Clashindra Hall is never heard from again. After that, the trail went cold. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's minisode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host, Robin Warder, and today's featured case is a request from one of our podcast listeners, Mary Ellen. She has requested that I cover the unsolved 1994 disappearance of an 18-year-old African-American woman named Clashindra Hall, who more commonly went by the name Clea. Unfortunately, as you probably know, missing persons cases involving African-American victims often do not get the exposure they deserve in the media. In 2013, Clea's story did get featured on Find Our Missing, a short-lived TV series devoted exclusively to African-American missing persons cases, but it could still use a lot more attention, so Mary Ellen asked if The Trail Went Cold would cover the case. I also garnered some info from a YouTube series called Real Talk with Tamara, which features a 52-minute interview with Clea's mother, Laurel Hall. Laurel and her family have worked tirelessly to find answers these past 23 years. They've put up billboards, they've passed out missing persons flyers, organized search efforts, met with the families of other missing children, everything imaginable to uncover the truth about what happened to Clea. This is one of those frustrating cold cases where it seems like it should be solvable, except it lacks that one crucial piece of evidence to blow the case wide open. And that one crucial piece of evidence might be someone coming forward with important information. But we'll get into the details momentarily. Before we get started, just a brief reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which alternates between our regular full-length episodes and shorter minisodes like this one. We deliver either a new full-length episode or a new minisode every Wednesday. We're currently available for download on several platforms, including iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play Music. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and we'd appreciate you leaving us a rating or review. The Trail Went Cold also has its own PayPal account and a donate button on the website. If there's anyone out there who wants to make a donation, it would be greatly appreciated, and we'll be sure to give you a shout-out on a future episode. We've also got a few new donors to thank this week, including Gareth and John, who has signed up for recurring monthly donations. In fact, since it's the start of a new month, I really need to thank all our listeners who have signed up to become monthly donors, and we've added a few new ones this month, including John, Carrie, Elliot, and Kristen, along with our regular monthly donors from before, Alice, Amber, Dawn, and Casey. So a big thanks to all of you. Whether you become a recurring monthly donor or make a one-time only donation, your generosity is overwhelming and greatly appreciated. Anyway, I also want to remind you all once again that in just over a month, I will be appearing at CrimeCon at the JW Marriott Hotel in Indianapolis from June 9th to the 11th. The Trail Went Cold will be represented on Podcast Row alongside the very best true crime podcasters in the business. Remember, if you would like to attend CrimeCon, but have not yet purchased tickets, you can get yourself a 20% discount by visiting crimecon.com and entering the promo code TTWC20. That's TTWC20. I really hope to see many of you wonderful listeners there and get the chance to meet you in person. So with all of that out of the way, let us now examine the unsolved disappearance of Clashyndra Hall. Our story begins in Pine Bluff, Arkansas in 1994. Our central figure is 18-year-old Clashyndra Hall, whom everyone calls Clea. Clea is very close with her family and seems destined for success. She is about to graduate from high school and is ranked as the top student in her graduating class. Her plan is to attend Tennessee State University in the fall to major in pre-medicine, and she hopes to become a pediatrician. Clea has taken an after-school job working for Dr. Larry Amos, who runs a non-profit charitable organization which supports in-home daycare centers. Amos runs this business from his house, which he shares with his family, and he has hired Clea to do clerical work for him in the office above his garage. Anyway, it's common practice for Clea to work at Amos's house for a couple of hours after school, and then call her family when she needs a ride home. At 5 p.m. on May 9th, Clea's mother, Laurel Hall, dropped her off at the Amos residence, which was located just over a half mile away from their home. 3 hours later, Clea called her mother from Amos's office to check if she received any messages. Generally, Clea's shifts would end at around 8:30 or so, but on this particular night, she was possibly going to work a bit longer, so it could be as late as 9:30 before she arrives home. Laurel wound up falling asleep and did not wake up until her husband, Willie, arrived home shortly before 1 a.m. They were surprised to discover that Clea wasn't there and had not phoned for a ride. Laurel then called Amos, who told her that Clea had left when a ride showed up for her at 8:30. Amos claimed that he never actually saw who picked Clea up, only that he heard her leave and get into a vehicle. Well, when Clea didn't return home by morning, her parents went to visit Scott Walker, a 23-year-old male friend of hers who was in the Army Reserves. Clea liked Scott, and they spent a lot of time together, even though her parents were a bit uneasy about their age difference. However, they were not actually in a relationship, and Clea claimed they were just friends, so her parents trusted her with him. Scott denied picking Clea up from Amos's house, and claimed to have no idea where she was. To this day, her parents have never found anyone who admitted to giving Clea a ride that night. Clea never attended school that day, even though she was a member of the school band and scheduled to take part in a performance. It was very uncharacteristic of Clea to stay out without contacting her family, particularly on a school night, as she never missed her curfew without permission. She also left all her personal items behind at home, including her purse and identification, so it seemed very unlikely that she took off on her own. Not to mention, why would she run away when she was 2 weeks away from graduation and going off to university in another state just a few months later? Her family attempted to report her missing, but because Clea had just turned 18 and was legally an adult, the police had to wait 24 hours before officially filing a report. Police asked if it was possible if Clea might have taken off because she became pregnant. Well, not only was this extremely unlikely, but it was also flat out impossible, since Clea had birth control and planned it under her skin. Anyway, investigators questioned Scott Walker and even went to the trouble of searching his residence and searching his car during a traffic stop, but no evidence was found to implicate him. He also agreed to take a polygraph test, and while he did not fail it, the results were inconclusive. Nevertheless, police found no indication that Scott had any contact with Clea on the night of her disappearance. Naturally, since Larry Amos was the last person to see Clea alive, police wanted to question him. But on May 11th, the day after Clea was reported missing, Amos took a trip to Dallas, reportedly to buy tanning salon equipment for a business he was planning to open. It would not be until May 13th, 4 days after Clea vanished, that Amos finally went to the police and gave a statement. While he was away, investigators went to Amos's house to question his wife, who let them take a brief look at the office where Clea worked. Now, given that Amos claimed that Clea left in someone's vehicle, one of the detectives wondered if Clea might have called for a ride that night, so he pushed the redial button on the office phone. Apparently, the person who answered said their name was Smith. The following day, after Amos was questioned by police, he visited Laurel Hall at her home. He gave them a piece of paper with a phone number on it, which happened to be the last number dialed from his office phone. He claimed police gave him the number, but that he didn't recognize it. However, Laurel soon discovered that this number belonged to Amos's babysitter, but police have never publicly revealed Amos's statement to them, or how this information pertains to the investigation. More strange inconsistencies would open up in Amos's story. Shortly before 8:30, one of Clea's co-workers asked if she needed a ride home, but Clea told her she was planning to walk. This wasn't Clea's usual routine, because even though her house was just over a half mile away, the trip would have involved walking on a very dark street. Yet Amos claimed that a vehicle arrived to pick up Clea only a few minutes after her co-worker left. He even produced a timesheet with Clea's signature on it, showing that she had signed out at 8:30. However, there were no sightings of Clea in a vehicle or walking through the area that night. The details of Amos's story also changed, as he initially stated that he didn't actually see Clea leave. He only assumed she exited through the garage because he heard the garage door closing, followed by the sound of her climbing into a vehicle. But Amos later claimed that he saw Clea looking out the vehicle for her ride while carrying a peach pop in her hand, and that she exited the house once the vehicle arrived. Police did perform a search of Amos's house, and while they didn't find anything, the search did not take place until 2 weeks after Clea vanished. They took a very brief look around Amos's office before he told them they needed to leave. Amos was also asked if he would agree to take a polygraph, but he refused. At one point, Amos even shared a strange incident from a few weeks before Clea's disappearance. That night, Scott Walker dropped Clea off at his house for one of her shifts, but Amos was not happy to see him there. He said, "You know I don't allow courting on my property," to which Clea replied that Scott wasn't her boyfriend. After his initial questioning, Amos never made any more contact with the Hall family, and he did not participate in any of the search efforts for Clea. In fact, Amos appeared to be going out of his way to hamper the search. Believe it or not, Willie Hall actually witnessed Amos tearing down some missing persons flyers of Clea, which had been posted around town. One woman even told the Hall family that Amos had paid her son and his friends to take down the flyers for him. The case pretty much came to a standstill until 2012, when the Find Our Missing TV show traveled to Pine Bluff to film a segment about Clea's story. This prompted a fresh new investigation into the case, and some surprising information was uncovered when two witnesses were re-interviewed. Both of these witnesses had done some renovations on Larry Amos's home in 1994, not long after Clea went missing. One of them recalled seeing traces of blood on some insulation, while the other remembered smelling a terrible odor while filling a hole in the backyard with cement. It should also be mentioned that Amos had the house renovated a total of 9 times in the 18 years following Clea's disappearance. Anyway, this new information prompted police to execute a search warrant to search the residence. On March 29th, the day before what would have been Clea's 36th birthday, they recovered 4 pieces of evidence from the west wall of the house's living room. The plan was to send off this evidence to the state crime lab for forensic testing, and the process should have taken about a month. But the Pine Bluff Police Department would not come off very well here. On May 7th, the Pine Bluff Police Chief addressed this issue in a city council meeting, stating that they had sent off the evidence to the crime lab and were calling to check on them every week, but there was nothing they could do until the lab finished their testing. Well, the following day, the state crime lab issued a statement claiming they had not received the evidence at all. It turned out that one of the crime scene technicians at the Pine Bluff PD had forgotten to send them the items, so everything the police chief said in that meeting was untrue. In spite of this fiasco, the state crime lab finally did test the items, but they all came back negative for blood, so there was no evidence to implicate Larry Amos. Needless to say, Clea's family was none too thrilled about how the Pine Bluff PD handled the situation, and unfortunately, the case has come to a standstill again, and there is still no trace of Clashindra Hall. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. Before we continue, we would like to send out our thanks again to HelloFresh.com for supporting our podcast. Podcasting is very time-consuming work, so it's a big relief whenever you can cut time off some of the most important tasks of your daily life, namely shopping and cooking. So that's why I'm very thankful for HelloFresh. HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking more fun, so you can focus on the whole experience, not just the final plate. Each week, HelloFresh creates new delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions. Each recipe is designed to take around 30 minutes to make in your kitchen. The recipes are set up so that anyone can make a delicious and nutritious home-cooked meal in 30 minutes, whether you usually cook for yourself or are not so comfortable making home-cooked meals. HelloFresh sources the freshest ingredients, measured to the exact quantities needed so there's no food waste. Everything is delivered to your doorstep in a recyclable, insulated box. Well, HelloFresh is also now offering light spring meals and has just introduced breakfast options. It's a value of less than $10 per meal. I am pleased to say that I have teamed with HelloFresh, and they are now offering everyone in our audience $30 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code COLD30. That's COLD30. Last week, I received my first shipment of meals from HelloFresh and really enjoyed them. That very first night, in only 30 minutes, I was able to prepare a dish of soy glazed salmon, which was served alongside bok choy, ginger-infused rice, and wasabi mayo. It was a delicious, convenient meal to eat on a night where I needed that extra dose of energy to work on this podcast. And it's just the type of meal you would enjoy eating while listening to this podcast. So once again, be sure to visit HelloFresh.com and use the code COLD30 to get $30 off your first week of deliveries. That's COLD30. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of the show. So throughout this entire investigation, only two people seem to have been seriously looked at as possible suspects: Clea's friend Scott Walker, and her employer Dr. Larry Amos. There really doesn't seem to be any incriminating evidence to suggest Scott was responsible for Clea's disappearance. He's never spoken publicly about it, but from what I've heard, Scott has moved out of the area, now has a family of his own, and has been a law-abiding citizen ever since. But the same cannot be said for Dr. Larry Amos. And in case you're wondering what kind of doctor Amos actually is, I'm not entirely sure, and I don't think many other people know either. He's definitely not a medical doctor, and seems to be using that title because he has a PhD. And this should give you a pretty good idea about what kind of a sketchy character Larry Amos is. In 2008, he made the news because of another non-profit organization he ran with his wife called the Progressive Southeast Arkansas Housing Development Corporation. The couple had received over $500,000 in federal low-income housing dollars, which was supposed to help poverty-stricken residents of Pine Bluff become homeowners. The plan was to use this money to build 47 low-income houses and 4 apartment complexes, but the organization only completed 6 of them. Almost all of them came in far above budget, and 3 of them went to buyers with incomes too high to qualify for subsidized housing. Oh, and one of the completed homes was sold to Amos's daughter at a discount, which violated conflict of interest regulations. The organization was also hit with a lawsuit from an appellee who bought one of the houses and discovered it was not in compliance with the relevant building codes, poorly constructed, and essentially a piece of crap. The case went to court in 2009, and the jury ruled in the appellee's favor, forcing Amos and his organization to pay damages. It sounds like trouble just runs in that family, as Larry Amos has a son named Omar, who was only a few years older than Clea when she disappeared, and has had numerous brushes with the law, including multiple arrests for domestic battering. Now, just because Larry Amos engages in shady business practices does not prove he's a murderer, but there's so much about his actions in Clea's case that bother me. For starters, there's the fact that Amos claimed that Clea was picked up from his house at 8:30 in a vehicle driven by an unknown individual. Well, we've got 2 separate witnesses who seem to contradict that story. There's Clea's co-worker, who heard Clea say she was planning to walk home that night, and Clea told her that only minutes before this ride of hers supposedly showed up. And there's also Laurel Hall, who heard Clea say she was planning to work later than usual that night during their final phone conversation. Yet Amos claimed that Clea left at 8:30, the timer shifts usually ended, and he even provided a signed timesheet to back this up. I guess it's possible that Clea might have planned a secret rendezvous that night with the person who picked her up, so she decided to lie to both her mother and her coworker. But from everything I've heard about Clea, it does not sound like it was in her character to do that. And besides, we also have Amos changing his original story, initially saying that he only heard Clea leave, but then claiming that he actually saw her leave. Now let's talk about Amos deciding to make an impromptu trip to Dallas before he could be questioned by police. If one of your employees went missing, and you were the last known person to see her alive, wouldn't you want to cooperate as quickly as possible, and at least give a statement before leaving town for 2 days? Since it involved a business transaction, let's give Amos the benefit of the doubt and assume that maybe this trip of his was so important that he just couldn't put it off to speak to the police. Well, it's possible this trip wasn't even necessary to begin with. Amos was supposedly buying tanning salon equipment from a store which had gone bankrupt, so he had to pay cash. But instead of traveling all the way to Dallas, why couldn't he have saved himself some trouble by wiring them the money? And in case you're wondering, Amos never did open up this new tanning salon of his, and no one remembers seeing the equipment he supposedly purchased ever get delivered to his home. There's also the strange deal about the last call which was made from the phone in Amos's office. Amos claimed he didn't recognize the number, and I suppose he was trying to give off the impression that Clea made this call, giving credence to the idea that she called someone for a ride. However, it turned out the number belonged to Amos's babysitter. I don't know the full details of this call, but you could easily imply something here. If Amos's kids were at another location being watched by someone else, then he might have had a reason for phoning his babysitter and asking if his kids could stay there and not come home that night. Incidentally, it's also worth mentioning that Amos owned 2 separate houses, but he moved out of this house and started living in his other residence about 2 years after Clea disappeared. Yet Amos suddenly decided to move back into his old house immediately after the police searched it in 2012. Even though they did not uncover any incriminating evidence during this particular search, was Amos worried that there was still something there for them to find? All that being said, even though a witness claimed he smelled a foul odor while filling in a hole in Amos's backyard, I'm not so sure he would have buried Clea's body there. Amos left town the day after Clea was reported missing, and that seems like a pretty risky thing to do if her body was in his backyard. Amos's story about traveling to Dallas to buy tanning salon equipment does not sound believable, so I do have to wonder what he was really doing during those 2 days he was out of town. If he's guilty, there's a number of possibilities. A. Amos was using this opportunity to dispose of evidence. B. He was staying out of sight for the initial stages of the investigation, hoping that if he stayed under the radar long enough, police would never get around to questioning him. Or C. He was getting himself a head start in case police uncovered incriminating evidence against him, and he needed to make a run for it. Now, keep in mind that this is all just speculation on my part. In spite of their suspicions about him, the Hall family have never flat-out accused Larry Amos of being responsible for Clea's disappearance. They've just said that he hasn't done much to help eliminate himself as a suspect. At one point, Amos filed a complaint against one of the detectives on the case, so it is pretty hard to investigate him without any concrete evidence, which is why the police have to tread lightly, so that they don't cross the line into harassment. They've already confiscated pieces of evidence from his house, but found nothing, which is why the case is at a standstill. Without a body, or any hard evidence against Amos, there's no way police can make an arrest at this point. So this is why I'm hoping that evidence will eventually surface that points to Amos, or whoever else may have been responsible for Clea's disappearance. It's always tragic when a family has a child go missing, but this story is especially heartbreaking because the victim had such a bright future ahead of her and was on the verge of moving on to potentially great things. Clea just sounded like an all-around good kid who was very close to her family, excelled at academics, and was planning to enter a field which she no doubt would have found success in. But it was all taken away from her, and no one has any idea why. However, her family deserves closure, and it's definitely attainable. In closing, all the credit in the world has to be given to Laurel Hall and the rest of her family for working so tirelessly to keep Clea's case in the spotlight. In recent years, Laurel has created the Clashindra Hall Foundation in order to develop a scholarship fund in Clea's name for students who wish to follow her path and enter the medical field. Later this month, for the third straight year, Laurel will be holding an annual banquet in Pine Bluff called the Evening of Elegance benefiting the Clashindra Hall Scholarship Fund. That gives you a pretty good idea of what kind of people the Halls are, as they want to help other kids have the type of future which was stolen away from Clea. This year's event will help keep the case in the spotlight, and hopefully, bring them closer to finding the truth. Remember, just a few weeks ago, an arrest was made in the 2009 disappearance of Pamela Butler, an unsolved case we featured on this podcast back in January, and I would really love it if lightning could strike twice. Remember what I said. All this case might need to be solved is one crucial piece of evidence, which might be someone coming forward. There may be several people out there who know the truth, they just haven't talked. So if you have any information on the unsolved disappearance of Clashindra Hall, please call the Pine Bluff Police Department at 870-543-5100. That's 870-543-5100. And if you want to learn more about the upcoming benefit, or how to donate to the Clashindra Hall Scholarship Fund, please visit the website findclashindra.blogspot.com. That's findclashindra.blogspot.com. And if you just have your own theory about what happened to Clea, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email at robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. I need to provide a big thank you to Miguel Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. And like I mentioned earlier, we also have a donate button on our website. So if you're feeling generous and want to express your appreciation for all the hard work we put into this podcast, we would be extremely grateful. So have yourself a good week, and join me next Wednesday for a brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold. ¶¶